Blog Talk Radio.
Have a little heart and soul. Let the angels take control. Let them help along the way. Have a little heart. Have a little heart and soul. Have a little heart and soul. Let the angels take control. It's a brand new day. But you gotta have a little heart. Have a little heart and soul. In the moment, in the silence, if you listen, you will hear all the answers to your questions. They suddenly appear. Have a little heart and soul. Let the angels take control. Let them help along the way. You gotta have a little heart. Have a little heart and soul. Have a little heart. Have a little heart and soul. Have a little heart and soul.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to Heart and Soul. Today is going to be an amazing show. We have someone that I have been longing to have on, and I know that everyone is just going to enjoy this conversation. So welcome. If you're the first time listeners, please just take a seat. It's going to be an amazing show. I have a wonderful guest on today. Her name is Elaina Prophet. She is a world-renowned medium, psychic, and a psychic investigator. How I found out about Elaina is she has a wonderful show herself on Blog Talk called The Gypsy Diva Show. And you can all tune in to her shows weekly, I think they are. But I just want to tell you a little about Elaina, because she's a fascinating lady. I so enjoyed meeting with her on the phone. It feels like I've known her forever. She lived in Paris, where she had her first house haunting. And for 2 years, she lived in Mexico City, where she was well-known. She actually was introduced to some of the famous healers and mediums in the world. And she wrote a column in the largest paranormal magazine in South America called Supermente. And she was featured on the cover. So she has had her fame, but she's a very humble, loving, wonderful person. And she does do private readings as well. She's read for some top names, and she just reads for anyone who's in need of her. She actually did something very interesting. She was a psychic. She went to the pyramids in Mexico, and she channeled for healers in the jungle of the Mayan country. I thought that was so fascinating when I read that about her. Anyway, one of her favorite power centers is Mount Shasta, which I love as well. Matter of fact, some of my teachers are from there. And she was allowed to raise her young son, in the Abbey. He was the only child that was allowed to be in the Abbey. That was amazing when I heard that. So he must be an indigo child for sure. And she also works with the dolphins. She conducts healing workshops in the islands, in the Bermuda Triangle. Well, that was really fascinating to me because that's always been an amazing place, a high-energy place. And she has also gone to the Northern Lights in Norway. And she's just been so worldly in everything that she has done. I'm so fascinated by her life story. But one of the things that really caught my attention was her work as a private, a psychic investigator. And that to me is something that I guess as a psychic, I've always wondered how psychics do that, because I know how challenging it is sometimes for just me, and I'm just working on just regular people doing readings. But I was so fascinated to hear of her story and how she got involved in it. So I'm not going to keep you guys waiting too much longer. I think she's on the line. Elena, are you here?
Yes, I am here. Good
hi
afternoon.
Hi there, beautiful one. Good afternoon.
You too.
Our switchboard is just, lighting up like a Christmas tree. And I did inform everyone that was listening that we are going to have a really great conversation about really how it was for you and how you got started in being a psychic investigator. Because as a psychic, I know that I myself could never go to that depth, and in a sense, in the mystery of who you may be meeting is almost scary to me. And so when I think of private, psychic investigating, I think that you have to be a very strong person. And I just wanted to know how it came to you and how you found yourself doing work like this.
Well, I had a little bit different background than many people in this field. I started out, I had been around law enforcement most of my life. I had friends in my 20s that were in law enforcement. I looked up to them. I thought they were just incredible what they did. One was a narcotic, ran in the narcotic division of an agency undercover, and then the other one was a pretty well-known homicide investigator. And long story short, I had come out of Mexico, and I got in contact with the one guy, and we were just talking, catching up and everything, and he asked me what I was doing for a living. Well, I was afraid to tell him, although he'd said that I was always trying to do tarot readings on all of his guys, when I was young. But I told him, and I was waiting for the hammer to drop on my head and, all this. And he said to me, well, what are you doing with it? And I told him, and he says, well, if you're going to be that, why don't you do something worthwhile with it? He said, why don't you work with the cops? Well, that was the last person I would think that would say that. It showed me once again that it was destiny in my life that was playing with this. Long story short, he gives me this friend's number, who's always had used them before. And I wasn't going to call him because I was afraid, because I'd never done that. I knew it was a heavy responsibility. But he took care of that for me. He went ahead and called the detective, and the detective ended up calling me. The next thing I know, I didn't want to do it. I told him I was afraid to. I didn't know how, it would work. He said, don't worry. I will help you. I will help you. He said, I need you to come up here if you can please come work with me. He said, and I kept putting him off, and long story short, then he said the key word to me. He said, look, I've got young women's naked bodies being thrown all over the road and all over. And we have to get to the bottom of this, and I really would like to at least have some feedback from you. I learned immediately that psychics do not solve crimes. Good detective work does. I believe that it's it's like a pieces of a puzzle coming together. Yes, sometimes they get maybe the last piece of the puzzle, but there's a lot of other interconnected dialogues that go on. And of course, everyone works differently. When I got in there, long story short, because this is going to be in my book also, he kept asking me a question and saying, come on. Finally, I was frozen, and because he gave me a picture, and I touched this picture, and I just kept looking at this young girl. And finally, he scooted his chair back over to me, and he goes, Elena, what do you have? What are you feeling? And I said, I don't know. I don't know where to start. And he said, well, tell me her name. Tell me in a very firm voice. And all of a sudden I blurted out, Carol, and it's spelled with an E. And God forgive me if I'm wrong. Well, it turned out I was right. And then we went through various steps with this. And down to the point where then I went into a level, I went into like a trance state, which I would find I would do. I started reenacting the crime, how it happened, what happened to her. My body hurt in certain places, and he asked me when I came out of this state, he said, can I show you some pictures? Do you mind? I want to show you something. Well, he showed me the coroner's pictures. And this young lady, her injuries were exactly in the same places in her head, in different areas, just down to the exact spot of how she was murdered. I would learn then that my body would have certain signals and triggers from that day on that would verify and confirm if someone was strangled, my throat would become mushy. I always use the word mushy. If there was a lot of blood and I started smacking my lips, it was because my mouth literally tasted like blood. And when that would happen, that meant that there was stabbing or huge, huge amounts of blood. And all of this became documented through the years. I learned that I had to teach these detectives how to use me. Because this man, this detective, looked into my eyes when I was finished with this case, this part of the case, and he said, do you realize, Elena, what you do? And I said, no, I don't know what I'm doing. And he said, you allow people like us to use your mind, to use you as a forensic tool, honey. And that's a wonderful thing that you're giving. And so that's how this started.
And how long did you do this work? Was it for over many years or particular cases?
I started this in 1983. Mm-hmm. And I went through until in the mid-90s. I think it was it was quite a while.
Wow.
It turned out everyone works in different ways. Mm-hmm. I ended up being able to, immediately right after that, I ended up doing a lecture because I had started to work on other things. And after that, shortly thereafter, I did my first lecture to law enforcement. The difference with me to a degree is I have a profiling technique that I discovered through just using this methodology through, you know, many, many murder cases and profiling suspects, victims, et cetera. And I've also lectured to agencies all over the country. I did a workshop in Florida at one time on my profiling methodology. And I also always had to go through and I do speaking engagements or talk to them about how to use a psychic as a forensic tool. And, you know, there's a lot of crap out there, to put it bluntly, in this field.
Mm-hmm.
They get inundated when there's a crime. The phone rings. I'm a psychic in California. I'm a psychic wherever. First of all, they're not usually going to use you when that happens. They usually call you. If you, once you've got your reputation established and documented, you may get a call, or you would have then. I became very documented and accurate in the tools and the way that I used them. And also the most important thing is that I never, ever compromised a case. I never talked about it. I'm not like these people you see on television. This is actually one of the few interviews that I've ever done on this subject.
It's so fascinating. Thank you.
It's my pleasure. I felt that it would be handled in a professional manner with you, Patty. That's why it is fascinating. People ask me, how can you do this work? Well, I don't know. It's been given to me. You know, I've also done crime scene analysis, as you and I were talking. I can stand outside of even a place and describe what it looked like inside at the time of the event, where the body was, what was going on in there. And then they've actually, you know, even taken me into places that were empty at the time, and I've gone exactly to the spot where there's nothing showing. I even had secret witness one time on a case tape me through the window. I said, I don't care, just do it from outside because you'll distract me from my work. And evidently when I got out of there, the detectives were outside watching. And they of course, I don't like to cheat, so they were...
You don't like
saying,
to cheat.
Oh,
I love that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I have a
would
client,
you
that's
think cheating is like if they give you too much information, you really just want to be organic about what comes to you, right? So
yes.
I hear you
right.
with that one because.
Yeah. I don't like
cheating. I have a question. I have a question just as a psychic to a psychic. When you are seeing, like I know exactly what you said, like I could be standing out in front of the building and see inside with, are you physically like in the building on an energy level walking through so that you can describe everything, or are you just like having a flash of what it is that you're seeing?
Well, it's kind of a combination because I am very, very strong empath, highly empathic, and I'm clairsynthesis. So I hear things, I smell, I taste, I touch, I feel, I see. Sometimes it's like a flash of something. And detectives have said to me on a couple of cases that the first time it really scared them. We were in one of the rooms, interrogation rooms, whatever, rooms down there at a PD. And I started going in and reenacting things. And then I switched and became the perpetrator. And my voice actually talked like this person said certain words that this possible suspect that they had actually interviewed on this one case was like, which gave them hits. Wait a minute here. Something's going on. We better double check with this guy again. And going back and becoming the victim as I was being killed. And when I came out of this, and I'm very woozy when I come out of it and everything, they told me they were sitting there, and they looked very shaken. And they said that was the most horrible experience next to what we deal with on it, seeing the actual crime. They said it was like we were watching this murder happen, and there was not a darn thing that we could do about it. It was exactly what we felt when we saw the aftermath of the body, etc. But it was like you took us through what happened before and we could not stop it. So we walked a lot of miles together. I'm very supportive of law enforcement. I'm very protective of them, and I've trusted them literally with my life. I've done a lot of interesting things, covert, et cetera, really some exciting, just like a movie. I trust them, and they trust me. And, well, they call me one of the boys.
Wow.
I am.
I'm
a feminine. I look like a feminine girl, but I'm also a warrior, so.
Yes, I know. I could feel that energy about you. So you really have the ability to actually shapeshift, if I was going to use a word, just
yes.
came that visual of shapeshifting from the perpetrator to the victim of what happened. So you can see both sides or experience both sides of the crime.
Oh, yes.
Now, on a physical level, Elena, how do you protect yourself? I mean, for me, I know I have to do a whole host of things so that I don't pick up things in the middle of the night or that I'm not spooked, I call it. They just show up and, you know, there they are standing in front of me. I really don't like that personally. So I wonder how you protect your physical body and your spiritual body from getting hurt or absorbing some of this negative energy that might have happened during these murders.
First of all, on that, Patty, I've found that this work is not for everybody. There's a lot of people that want to do it. They try to do it. You have to be a certain breed of cat, as they say, in order to really get down and dirty and into this stuff. You have to have a lot of strength inside you. You could, because if you do not have the core of doing this type of thing, just like these profilers in law enforcement agencies and in the FBI and what these people see, you have to have a certain, it takes something away from you every time you're working with something like this. And I have a various, I protect myself, I do prayers, I have my own special energy rituals that I do with myself. The difference a lot about also with me is because of the way that I've worked and I've gotten into the level of this work where most psychics have not, I also go into the departments. I go into task force rooms if it's something that I'm being called in on right when it's happening. That has happened many times. It's not just after the fact when they get at a dead end, because after a while they thought, well, let's try to bring her in and see what we get. I know that when I go down to a police station or wherever, that I may not be back home for 4 days, 4 hours. It may be midnight. These guys don't go home at 6 o'clock and have dinner and forget about these victims and their families. Mm-hmm. These people are gone from their families for days, weeks, whatever it takes. And when they would call me up and they would say to me, hey, what you doing? And I'd say, oh, I'm just painting my toenails. What are you doing? They'd say, do you want to play whodunit? Well, if I know that when they say that to me, that I may be gone for, God knows, you know, pack a lunch, you know.
Wow.
So when you do that, you know, when you go into it, and this is in my book that I'm writing in the chapter on homicide, but when you go into a police department, it's a very intimidating thing, even if you have friends that work there, because you've got the sex crime unit, you've got robbery, homicide, you've got all of these different energies and that you pick up in there. The perpetrators, you've got people screaming, they've just been told their children have been found, murdered, whatever. So you're bombarded subconsciously with a lot of energy. It's very intimidating when you go into those places. Some people work out of their homes. I have had them come to my home. But a lot of the times I would just go down there and they'd hand me something and I'd say, no, I don't want to cheat. And I'd say, just give me just a real teeny tiny rough draft so I've got something to kind of link into. I'm kind of like a receiving tower when I lecture to them at speaking conferences or conferences. I look at myself as a radio tower, and I can go to, if they turn the receiver like a radio station, if they turn it to the left, I can go to the past. And then if they move it up like to another channel, I can go to the present. And then I can throw myself to the right, to the future. And so I've got a lot of different variables going on there, but I like to just know just a teeny bit. And then I say, now I'm going to tell you what I feel first of all, and then you correct me or whatever, because I need to find what I call my red light, green light. Okay, in other words, am I hot or am I not? So then I go through that. And then they'll say, okay, we have a victim we found, for example, in a car. Whatever, just real rough draft. They won't tell me what kind of car. Sometimes they'll tell me if it was on a street or a parking lot or in a field, whatever. But the less, the better. Because then I get the vibes, if I have a piece of clothing using psychometry or something, or I'm just looking at their picture, I go into what I call level, and then I start talking to them. And, of course, they're taking notes. Then they say, and then I say, okay, now, you tell me, was that how much I was right, whatever. So then they're open to telling me, okay, this is what you're picking up. That was exactly right. This part we're not clear about. That means those are things they need to work on. See, we work a case up, okay? So then we go from there, and it's just one step after the next. And then after we go through all that, first of all, then they give me their name and everything, and I do this methodology and I profile them. Okay, then I can go back and give them very specific information. I've literally said, oh, wait a minute, but 3 months ago something happened with that person. And then they'll look at me and they'll say, you know what, 3 months ago that did happen because we checked with so-and-so, and yes, they did meet that person 3 months ago. It's fascinating. It's really.
So you're putting together the story that they didn't get. Because they you're giving them the A, B's, and C's of this person's life, so they can start to put the pieces together better to investigate it, it sounds like.
Yeah.
So, of course, you are so important. You are the tool. I can see why they use you as the tool.
Yeah, but see, Patty, too, that's, you're right with that. And the thing is that what happens is, in law enforcement, when you're working an investigation, it's like a pinwheel, and you start at the beginning. And that's why everybody, families, our suspect, friends, whatever, and you keep working out of that center of that. That's why it's important for people to cooperate and to do polygraphs and to get that stuff out of the way so they can find that child or whatever. And then they work through that. Okay, sometimes what happens is they get tunnel vision. They've been working on it so long, they're tired, they've got tunnel vision. Mm-hmm. So they can use me as a refreshing little different, I tune their dial to look, maybe I verify and confirm existing information for them. I add to it. And then sometimes it'll show them, okay, maybe we need to go check a little bit further south, or we need to go talk to somebody so-and-so, or geez, she said something that kind of reminds us of somebody else that we kind of thought maybe, but then we let go. We got too busy looking on another freeway per se, okay? That's how I'm used with that. And then it all comes together. People do not understand that this is a huge, I have had books, these murder cases are in huge binders. I have had the binders in my arms. They are so heavy, Patty. That binder is a person's life.
Wow.
And they have libraries of those.
Well, and do you need, though, I would guess that you could just hold, I mean, sometimes that's really what you mean by not cheating, is that you want to feel it before you read it, right? you're actually seeing it before the page is, you know, you read it. So it's verification for those police officers you're seeing. Yeah. And so it is so important to them. And it feels good to me that they are embracing you as a psychic and as a female psychic, which is even more wonderful, is that you didn't intimidate or have them treat you any less than, like you said, a buddy, you know, a part of the team, which I really love to hear, because it really gets me to feel that they are using every avenue to uncover the answer to their questions, which is who killed
The ones that I worked with, yes. Now, some of these departments, they're changing now. I've had some departments that people have called and said that they do not use them anymore. The only one that they have used for many years is myself, and that they don't use anyone else but me, I literally, because of the working relationships. Others are more open. I've paid my dues. People, you know, say, prove it to me. I say, listen, I've been grilled by the best. I've stood, stood up in front of 700-800 law enforcement agencies, people from Department of Defense, all these intelligence agencies, and I gave a three-day workshop. I don't need to prove myself. If I don't see it, I don't say it to them. And that's the other thing. It's a respect. I've been involved in cases where some psychic said, oh, he's alive and he's out in the desert and his hands are tied behind his back and they got the fire department and the helicopters involved. And finally they called me in on the situation because they knew this was a mess. And I said, I don't know who this person is, but this is not what is going on. And literally have them announce in papers that they called in their own person. There's a lot of crap that goes on with this that ruins it for those who really do have the gifts. And they don't have time. Time is of essence in law enforcement, in police work, investigative work. There, this is not playing, I've been on TV and then turning around like some of them and calling the newspaper and saying that the police had them work with them. You know, they told me to come and down and talk to the newspaper one time in this one place. I didn't want to do it because they know, and they begged me. They said, no, you can do this. You get your butt down here. We want you to talk about this. This is, it's okay. Because I never, ever did that. Never. And that's why I'm very guarded.
And they said that it was okay.
Well, yeah.
I wonder how, Elena, how long does a case usually take, if depending on, let's say it's an immediate thing, like this person's missing, and they call you in. Do you just keep working until there's some answers? Or you just keep working, and like you said, for 4 days until there's something that happens?
Well, or whatever it is. Yes, honey. And you know what? Look at this stuff. You don't know. Some of this stuff is still not solved. The pieces are there. They know who the main prime suspect is. But nowadays, I mean, you can have a video of somebody shooting someone in a 7-Eleven, and the guy walks. So some of these cases, they're still compiling. They have to make sure all of their ducks are in a row before they make an arrest with people.
Wow.
I
have a question. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt, but I had a question. It just came to mind. Let's say somebody who had been working with the police department, let's say parents of families, that were not happy with the investigation of their daughter or someone that had been taken, and they want to directly work with you. Would you work with families directly?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yes, I have had them call me before, but there's a catch with that one, that other people don't do. Mm-hmm. If it's meant to be. And they call me and they talk to me, and I agree that I will look into it for them. I have to tell them immediately on the phone. This is how I work. Most of them don't. I tell them that from this day on, I will not be talking to them, that I only will be talking with the detectives involved with the case. Because if I do, I'm compromising a case.
Oh, right.
And so they have to agree to it, Patty. They have to agree with that and not be upset with me that I'm not going to be. They can't be calling me and saying, "Well, what did you find out?" I tell them that straight up. You can't do that. And so from that day on, I may never see that person again unless I'm possibly there. Because my work also started getting after these cases, the agencies would also, the investigators would give me the families to counsel grief and loss. So I had a large grief and loss practice, and also the ability to channel the other side. that these investigators would say, because their hearts go out. People think they're cold. They have not seen what I've seen. When we get back in a car from being at a house and looking in some little child's bedroom and them talking and being so stern-looking and serious, and then we get back out in the car and take off, and you see the tears in their eyes, and their people, you know, and people expect police to solve these things in 5 minutes, you know, just like, you know, our movie stars do on the movies in 2 hours. That's not how life is, especially nowadays.
So
they're so overwhelmed. They are so, the dark force is so bad right now, and I worked on a lot of children. It started getting more and more with the children, and I stopped doing it because I know what happens to them, and it's different if it's an adult. For it doesn't make it any better, but in ways it does for me. But when it's a child and I know what happened, it just started really tearing me apart. You know,
yeah,
I've been to heavy nasty. Well, like I told you, I got a tour of Jeffrey Dahmer's.
I know.
Yes, Jeffrey Dahmer's house.
Now he had already. You had no idea about him at the time, right? Is that?
Oh yeah, no, I did have. I had an idea about him. I was. Yeah. The other thing that I've done is I have also been a member during that time. I was the only psychic that was a member of some of their agencies, from some of their associations. And I was back with the American Society of Law Enforcement Trainers back in Milwaukee because I had letters of introduction to these groups. Anyway, long story short, it was a conference back there, so I went to this. And so, of course, Jeffrey Dahmer had just done his thing, you know, back there. And one night after we were having cocktails, and one of the detectives that had been on that said, you know, Jeff, we'd like to take you for a little run by his place and see what it's like when you see something, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so my friend who was in rape crisis, she also was doing a thing there, and she went with me. She was with the rape crisis thing department. And so anyway, the next day we get in a car and we're going through town. I've never been to Milwaukee before. I had no clue about anything. And we're sitting in the back seat and we're going along. And all of a sudden, they said to me later, they said, all of a sudden, people, sometimes they kid and they say that I'm like I turn out like a bloodhound. And they laugh about it, and I can laugh about it, but they said all of a sudden I kind of got on point. I'm sitting there in the back, and all of a sudden I set up, and I start looking out the window, and I'm starting to kind of scan things, and they said, what's the matter? And I said, I are we getting close? I said, I'm feeling like we're getting pretty close to the area. And, you know, it was just a blur if you looked at the place. It was just housing.
Yeah.
And so long story short, I said, slow down the car. So they start slowing it down, and they come up to this apartment complex. Had a real interesting glass entrance to it, and I could see this, like an old-fashioned 50s or something, almost kind of like chandelier thing kind of hanging in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, stop right here. Well, they got freaked out a little bit. And I said, what is it? And I said, are we in the area? I said, this feels really, really, really not good. And
mm-hmm.
they said, well, yes, we are. We happen to be right where you said to stop the car. And mm-hmm. so I looked. I said, uh-oh, okay. And there it was. We were on the street. We were right there at the apartment, and there was an alley.
Mm-hmm.
And we went on the side. I said, let's go this way. And I got out of the car, and I'm looking up. and at these, you know, just the windows. And I started getting so sick to my stomach that I literally leaned over and started to throw up. I mean, I was just so sick, so sick. And I kept pointing up there. And then I looked, did a double check, because the guy, one of the guys, the investigators said, what is it? I said, it's right up there. That's where he was, right up. And then I did a double take, and I looked, and there was a window open. Well, they were probably airing the thing out, right? The whole apartment complex next, right across this little street thing, little alley thing, was completely abandoned. The whole street was abandoned. I started describing things that nobody knew, the public did not know. I started getting real sick, real heavy with it. And they said, let's go. You know, they said, well, maybe we better get you out of here, you know, after I told them a few things and what I was picking up and describing things that we were going to see at another time. I've been to conferences where I've seen the actual crime scene photos and so forth of OJ's and Simpson and all that, and then Jeffrey Dahmer and many of these well-known cases. I've been to, but that was after the fact. So we get there, we're driving back, and all of a sudden we're going down this street, and I said, they were talking about, you know, well, what else do you think about this guy? What, you know, and asking me, you know, is there anything else? It's pretty open shut case, obviously, when he's got heads in the refrigerator and, you know, different things. I mean, obviously, you know, this guy, you know, did this stuff.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden we're coming up, I start going on point again, and they go, what's going on? I said, I don't know. I said, God, it's like his energy is around here again. I mean, was he around here? Did he work around here? Or what is it? And they said, we're coming up right up the street here. A few yards is where he used to work. So they slowed down. They said, let's pull over. Because I said, right there, right there. I could feel the charge. I call it a charge. Well, he worked in a chocolate factory. And this building, I'm just looking at it, and I'm out. I'm going into what I call level and everything. And I'm starting to describe things, and I could see like a locker room or something, and I'm going through this. And all of a sudden, I said to this detective, I said, what in the heck? I said, God, it's like something. He had something in his pocket. Did he bring body parts with him to work? I mean, it just, when I heard myself saying that, it just made me, I mean, I was horrified. You know, my rational reasoning mind does not want to go to where I can go. And they looked at me, and they, the rear view mirror, the gun guy driving, and the other, and then the other one in the back seat, they looked and they said, how did you know that? Nobody knows that. That has not been disclosed. And he had taken male genitalia to work with him in his pocket.
Wow. I was thinking that's what it was. I just saw that. That's interesting. Okay. Wow. Well, yeah.
So needless to say, at the dinner that night with the chief and everybody and all these hundreds of people from different agencies and so forth, over cocktails, guess who they were talking about?
Oh.
I'm talking about my little ride over there. I mean, I was getting a lot of these guys going, boy, how did you do that? I said,
well,
I certainly
didn't validation,
because I was
too. But it's such validation for the, I'm sure, the detectives to see you at work after they already knew all the information and how you came up with it. So it is even more validating for them to use you because you knew things that only they knew. So I like that reverse. You know, it's almost like the universe said, we want to make sure you really, you know, are aware of Elena's gift, you know. That's what it feels like to me. It's like validation from many levels for them to keep getting from you. So I just
and
think
it
that's
was
so
unconscious.
Fascinating.
It was unconscious validation. I mean, I wasn't doing anything to try to prove anything. I just they just took me on a little ride, and when they took me to the crime scene, you know, this stuff started coming out. But it's not easy work. It's very dangerous at times. It does really, if you're not spiritually very strong, it can really cause you to become mentally, emotionally unstable. You can have post-traumatic stress disorder also, just like many of our police officers have from what they see on an increasingly regular basis.
Now, I'm sure you could work with the police officers and helping them move through some of that post trauma, I would guess. I mean, just knowing you.
Oh, yes.
So they would call you
in
to help them.
I have done that with a lot of them. I used to go on ride-alongs with them. They used to tell me that they didn't trust their own therapists. They said that their therapists, one group said that they'd been out on, I think, one ride-along with them. They said, you know more about our lives and what we do than this guy that we're supposed to spill all our secrets to. I was also sadly honored to be given the wives of the fallen police officers for grief and loss counseling and some of their buddies as well, and that was, you know, I was humbled by that, and that they, you know, trusted me with their people, because law enforcement is a closed club. They have to be. They're hated, they're despised, but they're misunderstood. They don't understand. We don't understand what these people go through until you've done the type of thing that I've done, you know, the work I've done, and you see them. They're not all perfect. There's bad apples, just like there's bad doctors and attorneys, but they have a lot of compassion. They have a lot of compassion.
And so the fundamental reason that they became law enforcement, I believe, is good. They really want to help people. And that's the ultimate truth, I think, that they came into it with. And I guess, like, because people are always noticing, you know, what's wrong instead of what's right with the force, I always think there's many nice, wonderful policemen that you would want on your side, and only a couple that you would hear about in the news, and now everybody believes that about that. And that, to me, is just so wrong, because I would want them on.
They take hits. They take hits, but there is a lot going on. I truly believe they need to work more with them emotionally, psychologically. Mm-hmm. We're having, I don't know about you, but we're seeing these people getting killed by these stun guns, you know, these for no reason at all. We've got a lot of things going on in my area here, too, that there's some pretty out-of-control police officers. It is kind of scary. I'm sure it's scary for a lot of the people, especially if they're people of color. Although we do have, there's a lot of the opposite of that too. You know, like they just busted a cop here that was black that was forcing some prostitutes to have sex with him so that they wouldn't arrest him and so forth. So they you know, and this was all in the black community where these ladies were working and so forth. So they are filtering through this, but I've seen a lot of stuff that, you know, I shake my head at too. So, Yes, yeah. I've seen the good side of them, but also we have to remember something. A lot of these people are rookies nowadays, and the game is different. It's a little different now, too. And there's nothing more scary for me, for example, than to see some guy that's got a badge and a gun and a taser, and maybe he's been on the force 3 years, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
He's not seasoned.
Yeah. And
he
maybe
reacts.
I have a sense there's a lot of ego sometimes involved
power trip.
With the energy. And when I feel into it, I mean, any time I've ever had to meet a police officer, I always immediately give them great respect. I do. Just, yes, sir, no, sir, you know, I answer them. And I've taught my son to treat, you know, the officer that way as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I do it because the energy of them is requiring it, you know. Is really, it's a big ego that comes at you. So I give it to them. You know, I say thank you, and I give them exactly what they're looking for, if it's my license or whatever. But I would not, if I was, and I always think about if you were drunk and you were out of control and you didn't have a good indicator on how to speak to an officer and you don't, talk to them with respect. I would get that would be a very bad thing to start off with because of the ego that you're up against. You know, I always think respect always goes a long way with officers, and I always tell my son, you know, that's just the way you should always address them with great respect. And so I really just think that's something that everybody should. I had maybe already has a feeling to do that, but maybe not. I don't know. I'm not sure about that, but.
Yes, it is important to do that, but also there are times where and you're seeing it on the news all the time, you know, profiling, you know, because of the person of color or something. There's all sides to it, but all I know is basically what I'm talking about is from working with investigators that are looking to solve a crime as fast as they can when someone has been brutally murdered. I've even had to work on a case that the woman was a dear friend of mine. And that was one of the hardest things that I worked on, other than a few of the children cases.
Was it a case that, was it a case everyone knew about? Was it on?
Yes.
A high profile.
In fact, it was up at the lake, and it was Mabs Martin. She was a friend of mine, the modeling school, with the two children that were kidnapped, and Coddington was the killer, and that was a very hard thing for me to work on. But I had to set that aside. I woke up one morning, my phone was ringing. It was her son, and this is right after my near-death experience, and this, her son was saying, Elena, this is Jimmy, and my heart went to my seat. I could feel something, and then as I was waking up, I heard the police radios in the background and him saying, please come fast, Mom's missing. She didn't come home. And so I got up and I went. And as I was in my car heading for the house, and I was looking at Mount Rose and looking at north and south, east and west, trying to scan, I kept saying, where are you? Where are you? And all of a sudden I felt her in the back seat and in my rearview mirror. And she said, I'm here, baby. She had a little southern... talked to her, and I knew she was dead. I didn't say that to her son, of course, but I pulled up, and the police were there, and that's where I met a wonderful FBI agent that I worked on quite a few really heavy-duty cases with, and then privately we talked, and when I went to the task force room and everything, with the police and then the agents trying to find the location of where they were. And then I did tell them, I said, you know, she's gone and we have to hurry because the rest of them will be gone. And so she and her little 75 or whatever year old friend were killed. And the sick thing about it is, as I'd talked to her the day before, she wanted me to go on that trip with her. She said, oh, we have a really nice young photographer that's going to take us up and we're going to do some shoots with some of the girls, some of the models. And I said, I'm not really feeling like doing that. And I didn't feel well because I was still coming back to Earth myself. And I said to her, I said, you know what, you got to be careful. I said, are you okay? And she goes, well, yeah, I'm feeling fine. I said, well, I thought it was a heart attack. I thought she was going to have a heart attack. I said, you need to take care of yourself. I said, you need to go to the doctor because I'm worried about you. Mm-hmm. Are you sure you're going to do this? And she, oh, yes, honey, I'm just fine. Well, that's what I was picking up. See, my mind associated it with something else, but I knew there was something not right about her. And I didn't go with them. I stayed home.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Definitely. And it's amazing how that, I've heard that happening with people who were supposed to be, a matter of fact, I know someone who was supposed to go, she worked at the World Trade Center, and she, that morning, got really sick, and she just called in sick and said, I feel so bad, and she said, not a person to ever take the day off, and that's the day that 9/11 hit, and when I was talking to her after that, the same kind of thing, she was saying, what happened, how come I was saved, you know, all my friends are dead and the whole thing. And it really, you know, was hard for her to accept that there was some, you know, in a sense, angel or message or something greater than herself that took her away from her going that day to work.
Yeah.
So I feel
yeah,
that way
there is
with you, you know. Yeah.
There's a guilt that can go with that. But that one, they told me that, because I expressed it privately to the investigators that I was working with, and they said something that was interesting. They said, you know what, that probably wouldn't have happened if you'd been in the car. And I said, what? What do you mean? They said, because you have a vibe about you, you would have scared that punk. Because you were so strong that you're intimidating, and they all felt he wouldn't have done it. He wouldn't have done it if I had been with them, because of my presence, how I am.
Yeah, I can see that too happening. Yeah, that's true.
that
it's like you know, it's like the angels, like. There was a. I remember this wonderful story, Elena, that I heard, and it was about this woman that was walking in New York City in a very bad area, and she saw these two thugs on one side. So she crossed over the street, and she called in her angels, and she said, "Please protect me." So as she walked by, the two people looked at her, and she kept walking, and she ended up getting by these two people. Well, they did mug another person right after her. And she happened to get the police, actually, and said, did you see these two people? And the two people were in front of her. And she said, yes, I do. I recognize these people. And she said to them, oh, and they said, yeah, we remember you. You had those two big guys next to you. And she was by herself.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that wonderful?
Because the angels were just energetically right by her side, and that's what they saw.
Ooh,
and it was it's just a wonderful story about calling in your angels when you, you know, feel that you need that extra power, you know, around you.
So the thing about that, too, is that whenever I would go down to a crime scene or a police station, my prayer has always been, one of the things I have done is my prayer, and it's, yea, though I walk through the valley in the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. And that was something that I always said. I said it before I went into a real nasty mess somewhere. I had to go sit down, and look somebody in the eye that I knew killed somebody and try to be cool and see what they had to say to me. You know?
Yeah. You mean you can't accuse them, I know what you did, kind of thing. Can you? I always wondered, can you?
You have to tell
the policeman.
You know, just like, hey, wait a minute, you know? By rod and thy staff, mm-hmm. they protect me and they comfort me, you know, because
mm-hmm.
that's, but the positive of it is that a wonderful mm-hmm. healing energy has come through me through all of this and through my own mm-hmm. near-death experience. And so therefore, that's why when people do sessions with me, I am able to get so deep and connected with them in the private sessions I do, that is a very wonderful healing catalyst for people to move them to the next level. And I've also worked in conjunction with traditional therapists for many years.
Mm-hmm.
So the positive of it is there's other parts of my growth that I've gone to at this period. And I'm also writing in my book called God Whispers, Whispers of Love, God Whispers.
Mm-hmm.
There is a whole chapter on this, but there's also on grief and loss. There's a chapter on my near-death experience. And also, as you know, you can go into my Gypsy Diva blog talk radio show. There's a show in there called Journey into the Light. And that's
mm-hmm.
the story of my near-death experience or part of it taken from my book. I've done hospice since 1986. I work a lot with death, but
mm-hmm.
it seems to be what I'm good at. And we all have mm-hmm. our areas, like they'd say, you know, people say, how can you do that? You know, just like they say yuck to the police officers. You know, how do they hang out with some of the horrible, horrendous people and things that they do? You know, somebody has to do it, you know?
Mm-hmm. So if someone who, Elena, if someone out there who's listening today who had an experience of loss through, you know, just tragedy, through death,
mm-hmm.
and they wanted to contact you and work one-on-one with you, they could get in touch with you through moondiva.com and go through your
moondiva.com
webpage.
Moondiva.com is my website, and they mm-hmm. can also send me an email at divaswhispers@gmail.com.
Yeah. And I highly recommend anyone who really does want to have closure, because that's really what I think
yes.
a psychic or a medium can help you do, is have the words that you didn't have a chance to say. I mean, that's usually what happens during a session with me, is that the
yes.
loved one comes and they get a chance to talk and even laugh sometimes. And they are very funny on the other side. They definitely have their humor. You know, I always think that they're not gloomy in any way. If anything, they're bright lights, and that's really why I can see them. And they really do want
how
the best.
How can they not be?
I know, exactly.
Having
I know.
Been there, how,
yeah.
how can they not be?
Okay, because that's really
yes.
who we are, aren't we? Yeah. I always say it's very hard to be in this capsule sometimes. It's so small compared to how really big we are. You know, and that's how great. That's every day I work on my light. My light is what I know, is what I'm always aware of. So I really think that that's ultimately who we are as people. We're just this amazing light. And if we can show up in the world and really be that and be as powerful in that light and as bright in that light and as loving in that light as we can be, then, of course, we understand that the body is just a capsule that fades away and then we move into another dimension. And that's as simple as it gets. I really get that death is just that. You know, it's just the veil is lifted, and we know who we are. So
and
I will.
How you get there? It's in my book. One of my sayings is, I've learned that it takes a lot to be born into this world, a lot of energy, and it takes a lot of energy to leave this body and this world. Some of us
mm-hmm.
do it very quietly and peacefully. Others of us, we linger for long periods are going in very excruciating ways. I was going in a very painful way. That's in my book also. But through that came out my meditation CD, Dolphin Dreams, which I purely channeled when I recorded it, and it has been used in hospice. It's used for pain control. I balanced all your chakras. It's like having a session with me whenever you want. So I don't regret my experience that I had, because it's helped me with all of the other work that I have done. And I was involved with law enforcement when I was going through my own situation. And it took me a while, but then I was back into, you know, working on cases and so forth. And I also had a lot of love and support from them during that time. Keeping an eye on me and praying for me also. Yes, there's been a gift and a curse with this work that I've done. I'm not doing any work with law enforcement at this time. I'm finishing my book. I don't seek it out. If it's meant to be, it comes into my life. I did it for so many years, and it was so much. And then I went into the training and the lecturing and so forth. It's kind of like I came full circle with it. And, there's times I've talked to people about a situation, and they come for a session. And then if I feel that there's something strange about the death of their loved one or something, then I will refer them to a detective or an investigator, or encourage them to get a hold of someone in their town or their area, and that if they did have any questions or anything, then the investigator could call me to hear what I had picked up. But I'm not as active. I mean, what I did was literally like being in a movie. I mean, it's not like this stuff on television. There's a lot of truth to some of this stuff on TV, but the rest of it is it's. Well,
I know everyone calls
it.
Me. Elena, I'm sure they call you as well. All my friends call and say, oh, there's a show called The Medium on, and there's this going on, and then I'll watch it, and I'm like, oh, that poor girl, you know. I would hope that's not the way it is for her. That would be horrible. So they really have. I know, for her husband and everyone, I know. It just seems, it's like, well, they have to make it so, in a sense, abstract that people would, you know, listen to it, watch it. But I was thinking, no, if that happened, I'm sure most mediums would not do that kind of work if they could never have a good night's sleep, you know.
Yeah, well, the gal that was based on, there is some real validity to that show. But, of course, they're over-dramatizing, you know, everything in it. But it does, I wish I had had a marriage and a relationship the way that she has on that show. Because, for me, it was, there was a respect in my relationship, and I was admired for what I did. But at the same time, it interfered, and it became a problem in my personal life, because I also would be given the clothing of children or people who had been murdered, that I'd hang up in my living room or something, because sometimes I could be doing dishes. When I leave a police station doesn't mean that I'm not working on something. I could be scrubbing the counter and all of a sudden get a flash on something. And so, you know, someone you're married to doesn't really appreciate having, you know, shoes or, you know, stuff like that around. It did cause, if in the public, that's why, you know, in ways police people and law enforcement people all kind of hang out together, because, you know, everybody understands each other, you know. It's a close club, but yeah, she's blessed. And the other one is, on the Ghost Whisperer. You know, yes, I am built. I'm quite busty myself, but I never run around with my cleavage like that, especially when I'm going into a police station.
Case, yeah. They would probably appreciate it. The policeman would probably say, "Oh, thank you."
Socially, it was a different thing, but I wouldn't even wear dangly earrings for years. In fact, I'd go sit in a waiting room, you know, before I'd go into an investigator's office or something, and I'd be sitting there with other visiting officers or investigators, and they'd all think that I was a policewoman, you know, because I had a briefcase, I wore suits, And then I got to the point where after I'd worked for so many years, they didn't care. I'd say, my God, my hair's a mess. I can't come down there. I don't have any makeup on. I look like a wreck. I've been cleaning house. And they'd say, just get down here. We don't care what you look like or if you're wearing dangly earrings and bracelets, you know, because I had earned myself. But trust me, anybody out there that's wanting to do this work, you have 3 seconds to make a good impression on somebody. Not just mentally and verbally, but also in your appearance. And I've had some tales told to me about, you know, from the guys that, of people coming in and saying they're the great Houdini.
Oh, I'm sure. So I can't imagine how many calls a day they must get of people saying they have had a dream or something's going to happen. Yeah.
Oh.
And maybe some of it's true, you know, I don't know, but I'm sure they get inundated with that. And they do probably just stick with the people they know for sure. They know how they work there. They can be, you know, in the same room with, you know, and not have to go into, you know, and think about it, how many different levels of psychics there are. And if you have to work with the police department, you have to fit into that energy that they have. And I'm sure you did a great job, you know, just blending in with them, and so that's why they
have to connect.
Yeah,
you have to you have to complement each other's energy. It's just like certain people, certain detectives can interview a suspect or a subject, and the person will talk to them. The other person can go in and do it, and they automatically don't like them. There is a thing, and I used to train them on that. There are vibrations. We pick things up about people. And so it's putting the right people together to communicate and to learn how to communicate in order to get answers or to find out, you know, if you're wasting your time or if maybe you need to help that person, you know, get removed from the list of, you know, of suspects and so forth. I just know
having this wonderful feminine warrior energy in the room could only help move things along at a different level and into a different place, just knowing who you are. Yeah. And so my feeling is while you were talking, I was almost seeing you. I'm almost seeing a movie happening after your book is written. I have to share this because it happens, and sometimes someone's talking and I'm seeing something like right in front of me. And it's so amazing. I had this happen twice, so I asked, you know, is this just my hopes for her? Is this really? I said, no. So it feels like the future for you is just going to be, you know, more interesting and more amazing because of this book that you're writing. So I'm so happy because it's almost going to get picked up and become a movie. Alan, I see this. I want to say this because, yeah, I see this happening.
Somebody else say that.
Did you? Well, I do see this happening.
What did you say? You see me working what?
I see you working with an actress to teach how you did this. You know, she's going
to
take
of
that.
I would have
to. Yeah, I see you. I see you explaining, and she's trying to act out who you were and how you did it. I see this. It's so amazing. I'm just getting such amazing visual on this one. So I have to share that with you because sometimes that happens for me that someone's talking, and I'm like, oh, this. Well, I just would love to have you back, and I'd love to talk to you again about maybe your near-death experience. That would just be a wonderful show. on what it was. And there were so many people out there that had them, so maybe we could have a show that we could share what it was that we saw and what happened and the process that happens when you do see the other side and the peace that happens when you do see the other side.
And if
what,
anybody
and
has
a
question, you know, I don't do reading. I mean, if someone has a question they want to ask me or something, you know, they're welcome to do that. I do have
many callers, and we don't have enough time for all of them. Sorry, lovely, wonderful people listening. But I would like to just take one caller, and I would like the question to be more directed towards Elena's process of being a psychic, and not really question about a personal question, but if you have had inclinations or feelings that you'd like some help with, why don't we take the question from that perspective? Okay, so I will. Well, let's take one caller, and she's been waiting, and I did take her to find out her name prior to the show.
All right,
her name is Val. So let's talk to Val.
Hello, Elena. Hi, thanks for taking my call, and it's really great that you're here to, you know, share all of this with everyone. I'm sure that you've helped a lot of people, you know, with solving these cases to put a closure, you know, a lot of family members and whatnot, and that's just a fabulous thing
that
you do.
That's the key right there, is helping closure, because whether they're solved or unsolved, it's all the same, that there are people that are grieving and need help.
Yeah, absolutely. I just, you know, having that closure doesn't make it easier sorrow-wise, but it makes it easier to be able to say, okay, now I can, you know, put this at least to rest, so to speak. So I think that's really great.
Have you had that?
Sorry?
Have you had that?
Val, has that happened for you? Had closure, yeah.
Have you had that happen in your life?
Oh, where I needed closure to death or something?
Yes, with a loved one on the other side.
No, I mean, there was my grandmother who had passed over, and I'll tell you, she had passed over, and, you know, my sisters and I were close to her, and my mom called, I was young, and my mom called us in and said, I have to tell you something, and I said, Grandma died, you know, and I knew, and I've been clairvoyant, I know, my whole life, and I read for people as well. But I will not read for people I know, because I think some of my feelings get in the way, you know, you want something good to happen for them. And so I have a very hard time determining, you know, putting that aside and really being able to truly read for them. And, I won't read if I am not in a good frame mind of mind.
Yes. Good for you. Good for you. So yes, because you don't want to be biased. That's the key.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. And myself, like you, I don't want to know too much about what you want to know about. Just, you know, I think sometimes if you have too much information, I'm not going to say it ruins what you're doing.
It doesn't help.
But it does, exactly. Sometimes too much information is worse than none at all. So,
exactly. That's great to hear that. Then you're coming from a really good space with all of this.
Well, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm, that's wonderful that you're doing that, and continued success and reaching out. And just remember to also take care of yourself, because we have to take care of ourselves before we can take care of each other.
Absolutely. I completely agree. Sometimes, though, that is a very hard thing to do, because you want to help everyone but yourself.
Amen.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Hey, Val, I was just wondering, what do you do to protect yourself?
You know, okay, I try to be very spiritual, and I just have this, I should have more faith than I do, but I try to just know that God is always with me. I believe in God. I know everyone has their higher power they may, you know, feel or believe in, but mine is God and the Lord Jesus. And I just feel like, I just know that they're always there with me. I just know that they will keep me safe. You know, if it's my time to go, they can take me. I'm not going to fight with them, but, you know, and I just try to put faith into that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's a really good start.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I think that's part of the whole protection thing, is to really call in whoever it is you feel connected to when
right.
you're before you work and after you work. So I know for me, I change my clothes. I always have water in the room when I'm working because it's a great conductor of negative energy. So things like that, I was just wondering if you did as a reader.
Oh, yes. Well, as I told you, too, with me, I had certain things that I would wear, and then I would take my shoes off, the specific shoes that I would use. I would take them off before I went into my house. I'd have, like, a garbage bag or something. I would take my clothes off before I walked in my, you know, totally through my house. I'd put them in a bag or throw them immediately in the washing machine, and then I would go in and shower and, you know, cleanse, wash my hair, my whole body, and visualize, you know, the white, blue light cleansing and healing me also. And just all what I'd experienced and seen going down the drain, I'd, you know, visualize that. And, you know, that was one of the things that I would do in the aftermath. Some days I'd be sick for days, though, on certain levels. So, you know, I'd have to rest. Takes a lot of energy, the type of work I do. And I'd have to close off from people. It's not a real social existence that you have. So lots of different things like that as well. To get rid of it takes time. Takes time to clean out.
Definitely, and that's wonderful that you have, you know, your set routine of what you do to, you know, cleanse yourself of all of that negative energy. So, I wanted to, if I may, I just wanted to ask you something as far as, like, you know, with your gifts and abilities, is it common for you, or have you been able to pick up on and prevent, like, murders from, you know, going on because you can stop that. Okay.
An example of that is, thank God for it, and I'm going to knock on wood here.
I'll knock for you, too.
I found that after doing this since 1983, that I have 100% accuracy when a law enforcement officer is going to get in the line of fire, and every one of them have lived. And this has happened all over the country with various types of levels of their work they do, whether it's undercover or whatever. I can see, and I have letters to attest to all of this, background packet, that describing, I see the scene, I can see, I'll tell them that it's three people on the right, watch a certain type, there's one person that I may see, or it may be coming from up high as they're going to enter a building or whatever it is. And I tell them that you're going to forget about this until that incident happens, and then it's going to come out of your subconscious, and your hunches are going to start coming in, and you're going to have a gut feeling when you get into that house, or you pull up to that street or up to that building, and every one of them has verified it.
Wow, that's amazing. That is absolutely phenomenal.
So, yes, Val, she has saved lives with it. That's even more profound. I love that idea that, you know, you can prevent the tragedy from happening. That's just wonderful.
That is
wonderful.
Well, that's really what I would want to be doing. You know, I would really love the fact that if I was going to be of service, that I could be of service before something, you know, does happen. Yeah.
Well,
so
tell
do you
them
get
to
that?
Wear their last chance vest, believe me, they put it on.
Yeah.
If I tell them they better wear a vest that day or something, they go, they used to bless their hearts. Sometimes I'd be down there working on something at some in some place, and they would come up to me. They'd be out on, they'd come in on break if they were on patrol or something, and they'd come into robbery homicide division or whatever, and because they'd say, hey, the voodoo woman's there here or whatever, and then they bless their hearts, they'd stand before me and they'd say, what do you see around me? And they'd be kind of kidding about it, but I know in truth they really wanted to know, am I okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I would look at them, and I would scan them very good, and I would tell them, no, you're doing good. I'd get a fix on something with them, and or I'd say, no, you guys, see, when it's raining, you need to slow down, especially on such and such or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that brought me joy. That always brought me joy.
Oh,
well, it brings
it has
me joy
to.
With my regular clients, too. They know that if I say something like that, you better listen.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So, Elena, I have a question. When you do clients now, do you need the body in front of you, or do you work primarily on the phone?
You mean for readings?
Yeah, for readings. I mean, because I do body work, so
when I'm doing most of my work,
it's in person. Yeah.
Oh yeah, no. I do phone consultations. I've got clients all over the planet, and if I'm not in the area, people can call me and they can have a phone session. They just have to contact me. At the email address I gave you, and then I give them the information on how to do it and what the information I need for the session. And, if you've got the energy and you really are that, it doesn't matter. You know, you could be in Hong Kong and I'm still going to pick you up.
Exactly. Yeah. And I like it. I like it better. I love not having the person in front of me. You know, I've always been a body worker, and then all the things happened while I was doing the work. And so now that I've been doing more just on the phone and not with a body, I feel it's just so, it's like you said, I'm not cheating. I feel so organic and so right on, you know, because I'm not letting my eyes. Oh, well, thank you.
You are wonderful. Yeah,
I prefer,
She read for me, and Miss Patty did, and she was on the money pretty darn good there and gave me some very wonderful, wonderful energy, things to ponder, things to look at and reflect from the inner level, and I really appreciated it. And, yes, I would definitely say the same about you as far as working with you and if you're the real deal, if I see it, then you are.
I know. It is nice to know that, you know, that we are coming from that pure place, I feel. You know, it's not about ego. It's not about money.
No.
It's really just who we are. We came in this world, and I'm sure we were probably some of the first indigo, crystalline, or whatever my client called them, witches, right, ones that became before me. But they were here, and they kind of are our lineage as psychics go, and the women that were the warriors, the ones that had to put up with a lot of negative feelings about what they were doing, and they withstood it, and now they're here, and they're great teachers. And Elena, you are a wonderful teacher, and that's what I see you as. And as a younger psychic, and even younger, Val, how old are you, Val?
I'm 40.
40. Okay, so you're a little
yeah.
bit younger than me. And what we're getting is we're seeing a lot of psychics and clairvoyants and channels that have kind of kept their gift under, and now they're finally starting to bud, and they're starting to be seen and be heard, and their voices are no longer afraid. And so I'm
right.
so grateful for this new age that has finally come. Yeah.
Patty,
I have a
client or a friend of mine, area code 707. Do you see that on your board?
I do. I see 707.
Can I just ask one more?
Yeah, that's That's Holly. She wants to, let's get her on there. She's on Facebook right now, and she said, I'm calling you.
Okay, let's put her on.
Hello.
Hey. Hi, Holly. You're on.
Hi.
How are you?
Oh, thank goodness. I'm wonderful. This is a great show, and I'm really glad you had Elena on. Elena has been a wonderful mentor and just inspiration to me. In the last week, I've been going through so much, and she's just been such a helpful person. She's a friend, and she also is somebody I totally respect, and this is the real deal. And I'm so glad I was able to see it really quick on my Facebook that you were on, and I was thinking, oh no, the show's already over, because I only do a show for like an hour when I do my shows. My shows are just my shows are on pop culture and rock and roll and stuff like that. We would love to have both of you on our show eventually, if you would like to, because we talk about things like this is great. And Elena is the real deal, yeah.
When you get down to the point where you're out of the cycle of kind of what you're doing, you've got a lot of them, then we get back into the spiritual frequency, then...
Yeah,
you know, well, you
and I
can talk,
set,
of course.
Yeah, and I can always schedule something during the week. Like tomorrow, my show's going to be on angels, right? So, but during the week, I can schedule both of you in to come on. I would love to talk to both of you. This is so great. I'm so glad you're here, and so many people should know that they should be blessed to be able to hear what you're saying, because I know from personal experience, a lot of the things that you say do come full circle and come full force. Who else is on the phone with us?
Val was on the phone.
Val,
how
are you,
Val? Yeah. Hold on a sec. Let me get her. Hold on.
I don't know if you heard the show, Holly, but we're
talking
about...
Hi. I did. I heard part of it. Val's on the phone with us. Hi, Val. How are you? I'm Holly.
Hi, Holly. How are you?
I'm wonderful. And the host is Patty?
Yes,
yeah,
Patty Sherwin.
Uh-huh.
Patty, hi.
Patty and I are going
to... So nice to meet you.
We're going
to
do a couple of
you.
Shows.
No,
Patty, no, she wanted me to do, a show on my psychic detective work, and I don't usually do those, but I felt very comfortable with her to do this and to talk about this. I don't know how much of the show you caught, but...
Yeah, you can definitely go on the archive.
I heard some of it. I'm going to listen to it. Yeah.
And I really think that this is something that I'm sure a lot of people have really wondered after, especially after seeing all the TV shows on all the mediums.
Oh, yeah.
To really hear it from the truth of a real person,
right.
A real investigator.
The real deal.
Who really has done it.
Oh, she really,
really
is doing it. I know she's been really in depth and really trying to finish her book that she's writing right now. So I know that she's writing, and she and I have spoken a lot in the last week. Sometimes 2 to 3 hours on the phone at a time, just about life, not even about reading, but just about how each of us and what we're doing and where we see ourselves in 10 years from now and stuff. And so it's such an honor to be able to be on this. And Patty, it's wonderful to meet you. And it's Valerie?
Yes.
And
Valerie, it's wonderful to hear your
voice.
Are
you from New Hampshire?
Yes, I am.
Where's Valerie from? New Hampshire?
Valerie's from New Hampshire, yeah.
Oh, I love New Hampshire. Oh, man. That just gets me in the fall. I'm in Northern California right now. So, we are having, our usual. It seems like summer skipped us because normally it's like in the 90s, close to 100, and we've gotten just straight San Francisco weather where I'm at, and... It's
cool.
Just been 60
yeah.
to 70. Yeah, it hasn't even been really warm, which I guess should be a blessing,
absolutely.
In a way, because, I can remember. I mean, and then this area, they don't believe in air conditioning. But at nights, I do hear the fans go on to warm the vineyards because it's getting that cold at night here.
Oh, wow.
So
you're in Napa.
Yeah.
Is that where you
I'm
are,
I'm in
Holly,
Sonoma.
Sonoma.
I'm in Sonoma, right near Napa. I'm right, actually, I could look across the street and see all the vineyards. I mean, it's absolutely gorgeous here. And I normally am on the ocean, and Elena and I spoke about that, and I'm getting back to that now. But that's the next place I'm going to. Yeah, I've got to get back to the ocean for healing. But, you know,
like San Luis.
This is great.
I always like San Luis.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, I'm glad you called in, Holly. I appreciate your support.
I am
and
so happy.
I'll talk to you maybe later tonight.
Yeah, I'll talk to you soon. Yeah, absolutely. And
thank you. Good luck with everything.
Patty, thank you for having me. And Valerie, it was wonderful to talk to you, and I'll let you finish. If you guys want to tune in tomorrow, I'm on it too. I'm doing a show.
I'll send her an URL
on what it is. Yeah, it's Red Velvet Media, and we're on Blog Talk too. So just if you want to tune in, please do. We would love to have you call
all
in because I'll have a lot of callers.
All right, baby girl.
Okay.
Bye, sweetie.
All right,
I love you.
Love you.
Bye-bye.
All right, good night.
Elena and Patty.
Yes.
Hello?
Pardon?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Hi, Vanna.
I just wanted to ask you you both, I guess, to maybe answer this. I have to ask, since you're both so gifted, maybe you can shed some light on this one area for me in general. Okay. As you know, I read. I'm very into this whole, you know, the realm of psychic spirituality and everything. Mm-hmm. Have either of you, or does it happen where you come across people that truly just cannot be read? I have found, for me personally, I've sat with some incredible people who are very well credited, and I cannot make that connection. I don't know why, and I'm thinking, is it me? Is something wrong with me? Or are there people that truly just cannot be read?
Well, there are people blocked. I mean, I personally feel a lot of the time they're not meant to be read.
Why?
I've done this for so many years. I've been on automatic pilot that no one gets in with me unless they're really meant to experience this energy, because it's a strong catalyst that shifts things in people's lives on many levels. So I don't usually get those kind of people. There have been maybe occasionally, I can think of maybe two people in all these years that it was like kind of hitting a wall because they were more so closed down. It was what it is they don't really want to hear. There's part of them that truly doesn't want to hear. Now, maybe they were just there to have the experience, and that subconsciously it's going to go in to them, and that's all you were meant to do.
No. I mean, me personally, I can't be read.
You can't be read.
You can't be read.
And I don't understand. I've tried to sit with people who are, you know, very known for what they do and credited, and I just can't seem to find anybody who can. And I say, am I the only person in the world who can't be read?
That's not true. You can be read. The thing is that it also has to be someone who's at the right frequency with you on that level. And maybe for some reason you are what I said. You're closed down to that particular person. You're not connecting. Mm-hmm. It's like I was talking about people in law enforcement and how each person communicates with somebody in a different manner. It's a vibe. So maybe you weren't meant to have that. Maybe you weren't meant to have that person read for you. Maybe you're not supposed to, at that period of time. I've always believed this. I could never get a reading myself because people were intimidated. And if I told them my name, they'd say, oh, my God, I saw you on television, or are you so-and-so? And I'd say, forget about what you seen about me or what you've heard about me or read. I'm just a woman here, and I want to just know A, B, and C. Give me some feedback. Mm-hmm. So there can be an energy that is going on there. Maybe you're not meant to be read for. Maybe you're still meant to do what I have to do a lot of the time, is go straight to the top, to the source.
Ah, okay.
And
that's
walk the walk.
Wondering.
Maybe you're being core. Maybe you're being, your core is being deepened. The chalice is being carved more deeply. And you have to do the same. You have to learn to trust more. You have to learn to open more. And, yeah, at times it gets pretty frustrating because, you
mm-hmm.
know, it's like everybody else wants help. And then at times we think that we need help, but we're unable to get it. But do you know what? It always comes at the right and perfect time. And it may come from sitting next to someone on a plane. I write about this in my book. Or in a coffee shop. Or somebody says a certain word. Or sentence that answers your question. So,
okay.
Yeah. So be more open on that level, because maybe you're meant to receive it more from the etheric level than from somebody in front of you. Do you see what I'm saying?
Do
I
get it? It isn't. Okay. I thought maybe it was.
No,
ah.
It can be.
Yeah, I'm not getting that from you, Val. I don't get that you're not open at all. If I was reading, I think I could have read for you. But I think that it's about, like we said, being not having any feelings. Now, when you sat in front of those readers, you may have had a feeling about her, and she may have had a feeling about you just by seeing you. So sometimes, unless it was on the phone, sometimes that is the initial feel. I've had readers where I've walked by and they're doing readings, and I didn't want her to read for me. You know, I don't know why. I just didn't. And so I'd walk around and I'd look, you know, at a psychic fair, and I'd check and I'd walk and I'd go back again, and I just kept walking to see which one I connected with, and I didn't connect with anybody. There wasn't one that I was drawn to, so I didn't get a reading. So I think what you might not be listening to is that inner voice that's telling you that this is the right and perfect person that will read for you. And sometimes that does, like Elena say, it just could take the person next to you sitting at the bus stop, you know, wait, and that's the person, you know, that something they say is hitting on the answer you were looking for. So to me, that is ultimately the angels. You know, that's kind of your answer is always being given to you. I do think it does take that quiet mind to listen to it. And it's not going to always be from that professional psychic that's going to give it to you. It could be from a child. It could be from an old person that, you know, says something profound that just gets your attention. I mean, those are the answers that go right to the core and go right to the real essence of who you are, and also the question you are asking. So that's happened to me a lot more than me getting a reading. I have, you know, have many readings, and they're good, and I always think thank you, and they might have hit on some things that were going on for me, but the big questions, the real soul questions, were always answered by someone else, by something else, by a song, by a friend saying something, or even a story they were telling me about something that was going on for them. Those are the ones, that's where I say pay attention to that. Because that's really your spirit looking and really grabbing hold of what it needed to hear, you know? And
okay.
So, yeah. So, you know, it's like if it's something you want to know about your future, it's always being unfolded right in front of you. And someone, like, I mean, I can see Elena's a little bit clearer sometimes than myself, you know, because I'm seeing it, and I'm not involved in it. So it's easier for me to see something that's happening for her. And I do hear you on that. And a lot of times, I know, being a psychic, I don't want to know. I really don't. And I have fought with my spirit guides, and I've fought with the other side that I don't want to know. I want to stay very neutral in my life so that I'm always I'm new to it, you know. I'm excited about it, you know. I don't want to walk around knowing too much. I almost shut. It's like I have radios, you know. I kind of like a lot. Elena was saying she had a radio frequency. It's so true how I do. When I go in a crowd, I shut down my radios. And my friends will say, are you picking up on something? And can you hear it? I'm like, no, I shut down. I'm not hearing anything. I am such a good, I always say I'm the best dumb blonde there is. Because I've purposely become that because I do not want to pick up on things that aren't my business, you know. I really want them to come to me, ask for it, and then the door opens and I can do it. So I kind of get that that's the way I live, and I really get that maybe you've done that somewhere in your psyche. You have shut down to really not wanting to know because it keeps you organic, you know. It keeps things exciting for you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, think about that one. Because
I will, and that's really good food for thought. I thank you both, mm-hmm. you know, for answering that because I just about have said, okay, God, if you don't want me to know, I won't fight with you. You're the only one I won't fight with. Just tell me you don't want me to know, or let me know you don't want me to know, and I'll give up trying to get a reading from some of the best people, that, you know, and I'm like beginning to wonder if maybe either A, he doesn't want me to know, or B, well, possibly I've closed myself down, but I try to be so open to it because I do it. And
there
are things
not
you want to know.
Yeah. And it's exciting not to know, you know. I remember many areas of my life where it was I really didn't want to know what I knew, especially I'm married, so, and there were situations that were big, and I would just say, well, okay, I know that information. I don't want to say anything. And then the next thing, I'd be, you know, cleaning the closet, like Elena said, and it comes back and it says, did you say? Did you tell him? And it's, you know, the other side telling me to say something to my husband. It's his dad. So I remember this incident. And I just really didn't know when it would be the appropriate time to tell him what the dad said. So I waited and waited and waited. And it was months before I finally got the, this is the appropriate time to say something. And it was really hard for me because this was my husband. You know, and it was close to my heart, and I remember it really wasn't something I wanted to know about. I really didn't want to know, but I knew. And so I really was grateful that I took the time to, like, make sure that it was the right thing to say, you know, and that it really was something that was truly going on right the second that I was, you know, was mentioning it. So I think being a psychic in relationship is very hard. And I know Elena and I were talking about that. It really is. It's not an easy place. And I try to, you know, shut it all down so that I stay very, very neutral to everything that's happening. I mean, of course, if I have a really strong feeling about something that's going to happen, I will, you know, say, oh, no, you know, something's up here. And I'm true to that. But I sometimes think that living it from this, like, childlike place is really, really good for me to do. And of course, if I want some more information, it will come to me. You know, somebody will say something and I'm like, you're right, that's totally what's going on. So I don't go looking for the information, though. I feel like it's not my placement right for me, you know, to find out every single thing that I really like to be surprised. I really do.
We've had a good connection and interaction this evening. It's almost 8 o'clock here for me.
I know. Thank you, and thank you for bringing up all these wonderful doors to go through. I appreciate all the questions, but thank you so much, everyone. The time does travel with us. The show sometimes it's over 2 hours, so I am going to say goodbye to everyone listening. I'm sorry if we didn't get to take your call, but I will be having Elena Prophet on again, and please check her own show, The Gypsy Diva. You can pick that up on the blog, Talk Radio. And Elena, are you going to be having any new shows? Hello?
Yeah, I'm going to start booking again here because I'm finishing my God Whispers book, so everyone needs to stay tuned for that. And probably maybe we'll do a show when I get the book in my hands. But they can also go to blogtalkradio.com/gypsydiva, D-E-V-A. There's some great shows in there. I've got a wonderful medicine man, Carl Two Feathers, that's got some incredible tracks in there that we've done. There's going to be more done with him I called it the Red Road. There's all sorts of interesting things, and then my journey into the light and lots of things in the archives, so you stay tuned. And I'm sure probably Patty will show up on my show as well, and we will talk soon about that. And then they can get me at divaswhispers@gmail.com. Maybe next time we can take more calls, but this was
I know, we had so many, and I'm really sorry about not getting to them, but I knew this the conversation would be something that would be much more stimulating on many levels. And so really I'm thankful for everyone's patience, and I know that this will be something that people will be talking about, because it really is probably, and thank you, Elena, for trusting me with your being the first one to interview you about being the investigating psychic investigator.
Well,
I so appreciate your trust.
I hope that it did help others. And like I said, if they have any questions or anything too, if they email you at your show page or whatever, then you can pass it on to me also. You know, if there are those that were listening that had a specific thing or something that they wanted to ask me in regards to the work that I did. Then if they do that, they can also contact me through my gmail.com email address.
Okay.
And I'll try to answer.
Thanks again. Let's say goodbye to everyone listening. Let's thank them.
All right.
And I appreciate your time, Elena. And we'll be talking again. I will hope to have Elena back on the show again. And maybe we'll talk about her near-death experience, and we can have callers to share theirs as well. That would be a really wonderful show. So everyone, thank you again for listening, and keep us in your hearts, and we will post the next show so you'll know when we're going to be on again. And have a wonderful night and a blessed day. Bye-bye, everyone. Keep shining.